Thank you for joining us on WQPH 89.3 FM Shirley Fitchburg, Queen of Perpetual Health, and another edition of Local Matters. On this week's episode, we bring you another episode of WQPH's Our Sister Station, their episode of Crosstalk. And Crosstalk is focused on Father Brown's unique conversion story. A special thank you to Angela Tomlinson for producing this episode. Without further ado, the conclusion of his conversion story.
Welcome back to Crosstalk. We're talking today, I'm your host, Charlie Johnston. We're talking with Father Avram Brown from St. Isidore's Parish in Yuba City, California, in the heart of the fertile Central Valley. We've been talking about conversion and what that meant. How did you, Father, when did it first start tickling at you that maybe Catholicism was something serious that you wanted to look at?
Yeah, thankfully, in my story, it was in childhood, because that means it's been able to be a part of my journey for most of my life. And I think what it echoes or what it points to is that when you have that heart that's hungry, when you have that heart that's seeking, God will continue to draw you deeper. He'll continue to draw you forward. For us in this life, we are never meant to be satisfied as God continues to reveal that he can fulfill us, can satisfy us far more than we could ever have imagined and far more than this world would ever be able to attempt. And so as a family there in Northern California, in my early years, we ended up going to a number of different Protestant churches. We were sort of, as we moved towns, and then even within the places we were living, we were comfortable with trying out different denominations. And so groups like Assemblies of God or the Episcopalians or ultimately Calvary Chapel were groups that my family spent time with. And then a number of other evangelical churches, you know, great communities, energetic, motivated people. But in that progression, we were still looking for more. There was still something more that we were seeking. And so there was a major plot twist in our story when mom and dad, you know, wanting to live the faith, wanting to practice this openness to God, took a year's basically sabbatical, a year off from dad's job teaching at a community college to go overseas in missions, to go to Asia. We went over there to spend a year where mom and dad were hoping to share the faith. And while we were there, I was 9 years old. My younger brother was six. My older brother was already off in college. But while we were there, hoping to bring the faith to others, it turned out that one of the young adults that we were working with was Catholic. And so took us, or we asked to be able to go to her Sunday service, which of course was a Sunday mass. And so there we were. I was by then a 10-year-old kid, my younger brother, mom and dad. There we were at this Catholic liturgy on the far side of the world. And we were just amazed at the faith, the fervor of the community there. We came in before the service started and everybody was praying energetically. And we didn't, you know, speak the local language. We'd been working through translators. And so now that we know what Catholics do, we can figure, oh, they were praying the rosary before Mass began. And then we experienced that first liturgy. We were able to meet with the priest, Father Joseph, after the liturgy concluded. You know, and since it's Asia, you know, you have that, you know, that little bit of tea as part of the hospitality. And so at one point in that conversation, he looks over at mom and dad and says about me, the 10-year-old Protestant kid, he says, you know, someday he'll grow up to become a priest, which is not something that you're expecting to hear. And to be honest, I don't remember that myself, but my parents did years later after I had entered seminary and been ordained. They recounted that experience to me. But anyways, that liturgy, and again, think about how just a single service, inviting a friend to come to prayer can have life-changing impact for them. You don't have to be a PhD theologian. You don't have to have all the right answers. Simply extending an invitation can change a person's story forever. But that mass there in Asia planted a seed so that as we returned home at the end of that year and tried to go back to Calvary Chapel, and Calvary Chapel was amazing. They had a whole buffet bar where everybody would bring chocolate chip cookies and brownies and Rice Krispie treats, deviled eggs. I mean, it was a kid's dream come true at the end of church to be able to just have all of these incredible things. So, it was a great place. However, in returning after being away from a year, it just didn't feel like home anymore. It was like they had changed or we had changed or something was different. And so mom and dad said, hey, we had that experience of that mass. What about if we go sit in the back pew of Our Lady of the Snows and just see what's going on? So it began the next step of our journey.
I'll be if when you said Our Lady of the Snows, it gave me a chill. Our Lady of the Snows Shrine in Belleville, Illinois, is my favorite place in the country to go and pray, and I'll be going there tomorrow morning.
Perfect. Perfect.
It is perfect. One of the things that I think about is that all too often, one thing that really struck me, St. Paul at the Areopagus, all the pagans and everything, and they all worship different gods, small g gods. And the first thing that St. Paul did was congratulate them for their ardent faith and then told them about the one God, the God of all gods. And I think sometimes when we talk about these things, a lot of Christians, they want to berate people for their thing instead of congratulate them for their seeking after what is true. And I think we could really improve it on that. But for whatever reason, Father, I know my parents always stayed Protestant, but they were very favorable. They were the unusual fundamentalists that were very favorable to Catholics. When my mother died 13 years ago, at her request, she had a rosary wrapped around her hands in her coffin, and some of the relatives, one in particular, was threatening to make a scene. We chased him out and that. But what do you think is the resistance to that? Why do you get that?
Charlie, that's such a good question because as we dig deeper into the discovery of who God is, what he wants to share with his children, what the good shepherd wants to bring to the world, over and over again, we keep discovering God's here to bring peace. He's here to bring love. He's here to bring joy. And somehow we kick back. Somehow we reject that to the point that Jesus ultimately says, "Do you think that I've come to bring peace? No, I've come to bring the sword, this incredible division." And that's exactly what we find is that there is collisions and hostility that makes no sense in terms of what we're actually dealing with. It reveals that we're a very broken world and that we're not only damaged as human beings, but there's an antagonist, there's an enemy who wants to keep us away from God, keep us separated from God. And so, again, if we're going to permit the hunger in our heart, the longing in our heart to stir us, if we're going to allow it to draw us into something deeper, more beautiful, we do need to be ready. We're going to need that courage to press forward. Even when there's friction, even when there's disruption, even when there's opposition. In this next chapter of our family story, as we started to discover Catholicism, sitting there in the back pew of Our Lady of the Snows, we didn't realize that for Catholics, the back pew is prime seating. So we didn't know that we were actually probably taking somebody's seat. But it was actually the first Sunday of Advent, that we made that first visit, and one Sunday led to another. And then Father Patrick Lee started meeting with us as a family and guiding us through the faith, showing us the history of the church, what Catholics believe, what the sacraments are, what the Mass is. And so we became more and more delighted by, we became more and more in love with this fullness of the faith. But mom and dad, we had so many friends. All of their friends that they had cultivated through the years were Protestants of one flavor or another. And stunningly, we discovered that nobody was ready to accept this new chapter. While, like I mentioned, we had drifted from denomination to denomination before. And by and large, we were able to keep all of our friends in those transitions. But once we took that plunge, as they say, crossing the River Tiber, mom and dad lost their entire friend circle. So earlier, they had become estranged. And thankfully, with our families, there was a thawing as the years went by, which we're very grateful for. But we lost, mom and dad then lost all of their Protestant friends when we became Catholic. And it was very sad to see this sort of response. So it's a true thing, Charlie, that to follow God, to honor God, frequently will result in a pushback or a resistance. And as we say, the world, the flesh, and the devil, we feel that resistance within us. We feel it with those around us, and then we feel it from the diabolical. This resistance to the blessing of God.
We are talking with Father Avram Brown. I'm Charlie Johnston. You're listening to Crosstalk. We are going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to wrap things up, talk about how to build a strong parish, or for that matter, a strong community anywhere. Tell you a little story about that when we come back. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Crosstalk. I'm Charlie Johnston, your host, with our guest, Father Avram Brown from what is it that I have trouble saying brown for crying out loud? Must be age related. From St. Isidore's Parish in Yuba City, California, in the heart of the fertile Central Valley. We're talking a little bit about, the struggles going the struggles that you go through. A funny thing, my dad became a fundamentalist minister, as you may know. Fundamentalists, a lot of times they have regular jobs, and then somebody runs the I don't know what it's called, parish. I'm just going to say parish because I'm real Catholic now. When their pastor died, the church had some challenges, and they asked my dad to take over as pastor. Well, he contemplated it for the longest time. And I talked to him, I called him, I'm Catholic then. I encouraged him that I thought it was a genuine call. So he took it over, did wonderful, expanded the church again and built it. It was more healthy and vibrant and all that. I was sitting with Dad one day. I said, "Can you imagine that? Good Catholic boy like me recruiting good fundamentalist ministers like you." It's part of the thing is having the grace. I thought a lot of times, Father, that where we're at, what our church or our denomination is a toolbox. I, of course, believe that the Catholic Church has the fullness of the deposit of faith, but what church we're in does not determine whether we're holy or not. We've got the best tools, and so those who have the best tools will be held to the strictest accounting. We have to reach out beyond that. Now, you've built, as I said at the beginning of this, you've impressed me with having one of the most active parishes I've seen. I mean, you're just involved in everything. Everybody's involved. If Father Abram says we're going to do this, everybody wants to get together. There's a solidarity there between that. And yes, 24-hour devotion played a role. But what other things? I'm thinking about how do you build that sort of relationship? I've got an idea, but I want to hear what your idea is from watching you, by the way.
No, Charlie, I think that's such a great question because it is so easy as human beings. We want to do the right thing. We want to help out. We want to serve God. And so it's so easy to put a huge amount of effort into coming up with, developing, strategizing, building the biggest plans, and then just pouring ourselves out into them. But there's this incredible risk that it's that thing that we call human effort. That it's an ultimately Tower of Babel, human construction that isn't going to end up in the right place, is not going to be bringing about God's plan. And so I think to go back and double check, to go back and verify, does this come from God? That humility and that seeking first of God's call, of His word, I think resonates so much with the accounts that we find in the scriptures. Just a week or two ago, I don't know when we're airing this program, but just recently we celebrated the Annunciation, March 25th. And of course, that gives to us the roadmap of how to go forward. The Blessed Mother says, "Behold, I am the handmaid of the Lord, let it be done unto me according to thy word." And so, this incredible openness to the will of God, to the providence of God, to the plan of God. And where does that openness, and we're going to jump back to that word we were looking at earlier, confidence, where does that confidence, where does that trust come from? And for me, in my experience, it very much does come from that journey in childhood, that God led my family, that God guided mom and dad into the faith, into the church, into the sacraments. I was 11 years old by the time that we were brought into the church through confirmation, first communion. And one of the crazy things about my story coming into priesthood is that I cannot delineate a moment, sort of a difference in the journey of becoming Catholic as a 9, 10, 11-year-old, and the journey of discovering priesthood. In other words, I don't have a remembrance of a time in my Catholic life of being Catholic and not knowing, not having the sense of a call to holy orders, to priesthood. And so that's very much a gift. That's very much something provided by God. I didn't have to go out and hunt for it. Nothing against hunters, of course. But it wasn't something that I had to go and track down. Instead, it was gifted. And so to have a deep sense and hopefully a lived experience of God's providence in your life, that He's caring for you, that your Father loves you, that He has a plan for you, that He's very wise, that He's very good. And then in that profound sense of providence, in that deep sense of trust in the vision of God, that we can count on Him, that we can rely on Him, that allows us to be open. What's that word? I forget the word, disposed to the grace of God. And then He can nudge us, He can guide us. God's not dealing with, God willing, in that sense, these sort of resistant, hard-headed, or as they said in the readings today, stiff-necked population. Instead, He finds folks who are docile, who are receptive, who can be nudged, like Elijah on the mountaintop, where it's the still, soft whisper that Elijah hears, that God can just whisper and will respond, like the Blessed Mother, that openness to the Word of God, that docility, that's the word I was looking for earlier. That docility allows God to work wonders.
Okay, now let's go through this. First of all, with Father Avram, table fellowship is very important. It's very important in the gospel. Father Avram spends time with his parishioners. I think something that's key is that he knows them. He knows his parishioners. And if it's important to one of his parishioners, it's important to him. They feel that. They know that he cares. And if they come up with some stupid idea or fear, he's going to listen and all that. So it's just natural. People want to be known. They don't want generics. They want you to know them. And so it's just natural. He's one of the most, Father Avram is a fully Orthodox priest, but everybody knows he cares for them. And he proves it by when they come up with something, he's Johnny on the spot to talk to them about it, whatever it is. So it's just natural that when he leads on religious matters, we're going to do this. We're going to. I remember the last time I was out, we had out in the garden there, and they're in that circle in front of the church. We had some sort of a devotion. I think it was the rosary. I don't remember what, but everybody comes. And that people will accept, they will embrace, they will give thanks for leadership when the leader is somebody who they feel, who they can feel viscerally, cares about them. I think that's a critical thing. And Father Avram is one of my favorite priests in the country. And let me tell you, I know a lot of priests.
Oh, Charlie, I'm so happy, so thankful to hear your insight, that recognition of what's stirring here at St. Isidore's, because since I'm immersed in it, since I'm in the setting itself, it's very helpful to have that outside vantage point of what's the secret sauce, you know, what is that thing that's making a difference here at St. Isidore's? And I do, one of our sort of, let's call it core principles here, is that recognition of every human being created in the image and likeness of God is a mirror of the Father. In, as Mother Teresa said, when she was asked, you know, why is it that you're picking these people up out of the gutter? You know, why are you spending so much time with these very, for us, repulsive people? And what she said is, she said, I see Jesus. I see Jesus in the distressing disguise of the poor. And so that ability to recognize that every person in front of you, and here, you know, especially parishioners, but every person in front of you is that revelation of the love of God, of the presence of God here and now, today, in your life. And so in being present to somebody, in responding to somebody, and listening to somebody, and like you said, sometimes those ideas can be, you know, off the wall, but you're still present and you still respond, and you still listen. And in seeing Jesus in each person, that allows the Holy Spirit to stir in the family, in the community, in this place that God is bringing together. And so in trusting that God is bringing together in his providence those fellow travelers on the journey, that allows you to respond with openness, with wholeheartedness, knowing that God will guide the work that he's bringing about.
Indeed. And when you do that, they respond to you with openness and with wholeheartedness, and you become truly a parish family. I've been talking today with Father Avram Brown from St. Isidore's in Yuba City, California, the heart of the Central Valley. Father Avram, I thank you for joining us. We have run out of time. So do you have any last words, Father?
Well, Charlie, I just really enjoyed the chance to be with you today. You have a great team putting this together. And since we're in 2025, Jubilee year, what an incredible thing to realize God is faithful. He's been guiding us through the seasons of deliverance, these new chapters of freedom. This year, this Jubilee year, is called the Year of Hope. So to open our hearts to that deliverance, that blessing, that deep hope that the Holy Spirit brings to us, this is a great time to be Catholic, and a great time to say yes to the work of God.
Brother, Father Avram Brown, for myself, thank you for listening to Crosstalk. We'll see you next time. So that was good, Father. I enjoyed it. You know, Father is about to go to Asia.
Oh, wow.
He's looking for Aslan.
Yeah.
He's
truly,
hunting
truly.
For Aslan. But appreciate it, Father, and I will see you this fall. Your sabbatical will be over.
Correct. No, by the time you get here, I'll be back on the ground, God willing, and hopefully our temperatures will have cooled down. August can still be pretty toasty, And then by September, there's the possibility that it's survivable. So we'll see where we're at when we're here.
Some of this stuff, it's very important how you deal with that stuff. That business of being open to all, being open and listening and having a little humility plays a big role. In any case, Father Abram, enjoy your sabbatical, and I will see you when you get back.
Thanks so much, Charlie. I'm super happy to be here today.
All right, God bless.
You've been listening to Crosstalk with Charlie Johnston. Visit the CORAC website at corac.co, not .com, but .co.
Thank you for listening to another edition of WQPH's Local Matters. We hope you enjoyed the broadcast and hope you have a blessed week.